Blog Talk Radio.
Archangels, ghosts, and Bigfoot. Oh my! It's just another night for Supernatural Girls. Real stories, real answers to life's biggest supernatural mysteries. And now for another exciting interview with paranormal experts from this world and others. Psychic medium Helene Olson and paranormal researcher Patricia Baker. Here are Supernatural Girls.
Welcome, everyone, to Supernatural Girls. I am your host, Patricia Baker, and I have to apologize for the incredible problem that we've had with Blog Talk tonight. It is not us, I guarantee you. We've done everything right. So, anyways, I'll lay this at the feet of Blog Talk, and I apologize to all of you that have been waiting patiently for the show to start, but we are here. We are live. And we have an incredible show for you tonight. Helene, hello.
I'm here. I've been here the whole time, just like everyone else. And
just like
I'm a little
all
nervous,
of our crew. We were all here. We were all on time. And the Blog Talk radio board went kablooey.
Right. But did you have to make a new link to the show?
I did. I had to type in something really quickly, and then I'll have to go back and fix it so everybody can find it later.
Well, later, because I guess they lost the connection, so they won't find the link again because it's an old
now, link has been also gone to kablooey land, I guess. But anyways, we won't belabor the problems of Blog Talk.
We'll just promote it again tomorrow, and everyone can listen to this, and that'll be great.
That's right. So how are you this evening?
I'm fine. I'm happy to see the rain, actually. We needed it.
Well, we had quite a lot of it, didn't we?
Yeah. I don't think we got as much as you did. It hasn't been horribly drenching rain.
We had torrential rain. But it's okay. It's sunny skies now, and it's twilight, which is a time of magic. And that's what we read about this week in the book Demon Street USA by David Roundtree and Robbie Lund. What a great book.
You know, it really captivated my attention, and often things that are pure horror stories do not, because, you know, I have to fight a lot of this stuff sometimes, and it doesn't interest me from a perspective of wanting to be titillated or horrified. But this really was, you know, a spiritual journey. It really was educational in the sense of learning how to overcome fear and stand in your power, you know. And so I really love the book.
It was excellent. It was a really great read, and they talked a lot about the Castaneda path of power, path with a heart. That's all things that we've learned about through the years, and it's going to be great to hear from them directly as to what happened. My goodness, because there was so much excitement with this in terms of the demons they were dealing with and the people that were under the charge of the demons. I mean, my God, I can't wait to get them on the show. This is going to be great. And and again, I thank everybody for their patience with us tonight and sticking with us as we have attempted to correct the difficulty from Blog Talk so that we can bring you this show. And we have Patricia Kirkman. She has generously called back. Hi, Patricia. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, waiting for our storm to hit here.
Uh-oh.
I'm wondering,
is it a rainstorm? Is it rain or dust, Patricia?
It's rain this time.
Ooh.
We had 2 inches of rain yesterday in an hour.
Wow.
And then it cooled off, and then we had sun. Most of a good part of the roads were cleared, and now they're calling for another thunderstorm that will close our roads down and no flat. So just waiting for the next carry on.
Oh, my. Well, we have an interesting day today. It's the number 13. So tell us about the number 13. What does this mean?
Well, we have to always remember that we work with the universe, and this is a universal 6 month. so the fact that the day itself is a 13 to that universal 6 months means that we are in a one personal day for all of us, universal day for all of us. So it's all about good times to do things that are for the self, get appointments taken care of, you stay on top of things that you need to do. And it's really when you could see more issues coming to the surface about business. Successes are going to be rather emotional ones at times, but you're going to want things to be perfect. Logic is the key for the day. And remember, if you demand, you must be willing to concede something as well.
That wow, makes everybody it sounds like a tall
smile.
Order for the number 13.
Ooh. Well, it is because we're not just looking at the 13. We're looking at how it interplays with this month. For all of us, we must remember that this month is a review of last year.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
We're all calling housekeeping. We have to review.
Oh, yes. It's not fun.
No, well, you know, but hey, if it clears the clutter out of the way, that's always a good thing.
That's the whole
always
thing.
Always a good
necessary.
Thing.
We've already know where we've been. Now let's just tidy up the loose ends.
Yeah, that's right. And we've got an interesting celebrity to talk about tonight because Doctor Who is returning to television, and I know there's a lot of Doctor Who fans out there. And we talked about your taking a look at David Tennant, who, in my opinion, embodied Doctor Who. So what did you find out about dear David Tennant, Doctor Who of all time?
Well, David Tennant, to begin with, is David John McDonald.
Uh-huh.
He's working under an alias, okay? But
okay.
It really has been to his benefit to use that because it makes him more flexible. This man is very creative. He's good social, but he's very sensitive. Issues with females, sorry about that, gals, but that's the way it is. And he's overly sensitive. That's the reason for it. But he's very outgoing and creative. But when it comes to details of things, my goodness gracious, you could not find anybody that's more willing to make change. And he changes things detail-wise. It's almost like he keeps becoming a chameleon in how he handles things. It's very interesting. But when it comes to actually being changeable, he fights it. He ends up, it makes it very difficult for him because he'll make change so things don't change. Yet his work has always got to be about changes. Now, boy, talk about a dichotomy. But he's very, very concerned about everything being perfect, which we can see in how he plays the role. But he doesn't trust a lot of people. They have to prove trustworthy before he'll step up to the plate there. Good balance.
A little test.
Mm-hmm. He has a 4 achievement number, which is very detailed. Everything's got to be just precise as could be, as coming from the name David. He has that same issue. Everything's got to be perfect and by the book. And he has a destiny that's a 22-4, which is perfect and by the book. So he can be a very hard taskmaster. If you have, don't cross him, let's put it that way. He's good at what he does, but he does not like it when you don't play to his perfectionistic side.
Interesting. Well, you know, you've said this quite a few times, that the people that are involved in this business are perfectionists. They really do pay a lot of attention to detail, and I guess that's what makes them such great actors, because they are embodying the details that make up the roles that they play. And certainly with David Tennant, I mean, he was just a phenomenal, phenomenal Doctor Who. We were very sad when he left the role of his own choice and went on to do other things, but he was Doctor Who for so many people, and we've waited a long time for Doctor Who to come back. I don't know why it takes them so long to make all their episodes. I don't know how many we have coming, 5 or 6, not a lot, but it's a great show, and I know we've been talking on Facebook and on Twitter about one of the all-time favorites, which is Don't Blink, which David Tennant started. And,
right.
You know, it is just a brilliant show all the way around, and he certainly made it happen with his tremendous acting ability. So we were sorry to see him go, but happy to hear you talk about him.
Well, he's back.
Yeah, he's
back. It's
going
to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. And he is married. I thought from something I read that he wasn't, but he is married since 2011 to Georgia Moffat.
And she played on the show also, right?
Well, she played Detective Inspector Samantha a mixer, I believe it was, in one of the shows, whether it's with Doctor Who or another one. But she's got a pretty, she's pretty talented in her own right. But they have a daughter, which I had to chuckle about because he has issues with females, and God gets even. He gave him a daughter to learn how to work it out, right?
Oh, boy. So is it everybody walking on eggshells in that house or what?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm sure he is. but he tends to be a hard taskmaster. He really does. So although he comes across as kind of a soft puppy when you're taking a look at his promo and his facial features and whatever, he does tend to be very much black and white on board, my way or the highway.
Ooh.
Yes. So that's
wow.
why he's so good at what he does, because he doesn't change anything that he sees as the proper way. He'll stick with it regardless of what anybody else tells him.
Oh, my goodness. Uh-huh. Well, again, very, very
it's
determined individuals.
Oh, yes, that they are, that they are.
Well, thank you, Patricia. Thank you so much.
You're
again
welcome.
For your insight for our day, number 13, and the month of August, and redoing and housekeeping and all those things we need to be paying attention to make the most of all this energy, and also for giving us the scoop on David Tennant. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Enjoyed it.
Well,
enjoy
thanks.
The show,
so,
ladies.
Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you. It's good to actually get on the air and have a show. Gee. Anyways, so thank you so much. And let's see, Helene, we are ready for our guests. I just have to make sure our guests are now ready for us.
I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure, but let's see. Let's give Patricia Kirkman a break here. You know, this book, it just has so much to it. I hope we can get both these guys on the air pretty quick because I have a lot of questions for them. We have David Rowntree, who has been researching the paranormal since 1976, and he's the executive director of Spirit Lab, which is a scientific mm-hmm. research organization in Hackettstown, New Jersey. So he's also a Lakota shaman. Can't wait
that's
to talk to him.
Really incredible, and that's the part that I loved about the book. It
yeah,
really is,
because
both of the guys are on a spiritual journey, and it's just amazing that they were able to incorporate that into something that someone would consider horror, I guess. But it was a real occurrence, and it was a great way to explain how these things can happen. Now, the most interesting part of it to me was that the owner, well, I'm giving away some of the book, but the owner was the one who actually brought this energy in.
That was the weird part. I want to ask them more about, was it Clevis was the guy's name? It just seemed like he was really delving into things he shouldn't be.
Oh, I don't think so. I think he wanted to. I think he was trained
yeah.
from an early age, and that this was his source of power.
I see. Interesting.
He bound them. He had to have, because the interesting part of the book was that when he was around, they were quiet.
Aha. Very quiet. Ooh.
So he had them set after Penny and, you know, other people. But
yeah. Wow. Well, we got to get the inside
scoop. Control
of
them,
I think both David and Robbie Lunt are here now. Now, let me just tell our audience a little bit about Robbie. He's an arcanologist currently residing in Washoe Valley, Nevada. He has been performing energy work in both Tai Chi and Reiki for more than 20 years. He's also a member of the Way of Nature Fellowship. So let's get these guys on the air. We got to get the inside story here because this is a great book. Everybody, you should go out and buy it from Amazon.com. The name of it is Demon Street USA, and our guests are on the air. You are live on the air, David and Robbie. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you.
Did we make it?
You made it. We actually have a show now.
We've been chuckling because we're used to this, actually.
I was just going to say, who are your friends? Someone's hanging around the outside of your field trying to play
every
games.
Every show to date that we have done and talked about this project, we have had technical difficulties.
No. Mm-hmm. My God,
I
was blaming Blog Talk.
Yeah, I do about 30 interviews a month for various things, for my research and for, you know, Robbie and I do interviews for this.
Mm-hmm.
And I never have any technical difficulties with anything, but when we talk about this subject matter, we always have had a technical difficulty. We had one show that didn't even happen. We had to reschedule it for the following week.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank goodness.
Is this David we're talking to right now?
Yeah, this is David.
Okay. Hi, David. Have you actually checked into that? Because it seems to me when all this started that there was something set upon you, not personally, not in your life day to day, but sort of like...
there's things that...
I don't want to use the word, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's things that did not want this book to come out.
Yeah.
In fact, the sequel to the book will be about that process.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that do not want these things to be revealed.
Well, I'll put it this way. Someone put the curse on you.
Yeah. Well, it's not a curse.
Well, I know.
We're actually both shamans, and we're dealing with
mm-hmm.
these entities still to this day.
There are
numerous sequels in the works for this book. At least four more are coming based on just the process of when we decided to write it a couple years ago, the process of trying to get it written, and then the whole process of trying to get a publisher, and then the whole process of trying to promote it,
mm-hmm.
and all sorts of things that began to happen since.
Mm-hmm.
So we are still dealing with these energies, these entities, and I imagine we probably will be for the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Now, are they bothering you personally or just in terms of what you're trying to do to get this information out?
Oh, yeah, it's a personal conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
All of us, and we have an inner circle of people who are like a part of, we do a lot of spiritual things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, their stories will be part of the next few books as well.
Mm-hmm.
They've had things happen to them and occur to them. We have subsequently trained two additional shamans in our path, and some interesting things have occurred, and that'll be for the next books down the road. But yes, definitely. We are targets.
So these entities that you've battled with and that continue to be a part of your lives, what's their deal? Is this all about chaos? Is it all about throwing a monkey wrench into the things you're doing?
I think it's all about a struggle for power in this reality. And I think that we were the ones that kind of threw the monkey wrench into their agenda, not knowing back then when we initially entered into the story of Demon Street USA, we didn't have a clue as to the far-reaching aspects of what dealing with this sort of phenomena would create. Back in 1985, there were no books about this. There was no popularity to it. You didn't go around telling people, you know, that you... I was a paranormal researcher at the time. You didn't tell people that.
Mm-hmm.
You certainly didn't tell people that, you know, you were a shaman. That was something that was word of mouth to people that would seek you out to try to get help. So it was a very under-the-carpet kind of thing back in those days. And exactly, we could not have written the book back then after it happened because there was no market for it. Not only was there no market for it, but people weren't really ready to read it. The atmosphere has changed such that today people are more open to these situations. They understand it. They can relate to it because they've had personal experiences of their own. So that was the whole process of leading up to 27 years later deciding to write the book. And we always knew we would write it. We just had no idea when. We just knew that, you know, Spirit would tell us when it was time to write it, and that's kind of what happened.
Now, it started out as you're trying to help a young woman to get out from under the influence of a house that appeared to be haunted. Is that how this all started? Why don't you set the stage a little bit for our audience on this adventure?
Let me let Robbie do that, because Robbie actually came to me with the information, and it was really See, Penelope was his personal friend. I knew her sort of superficially just from the work that we did in the entertainment industry. But I wasn't a personal friend of hers at that point. Robbie was. And she came to Robbie with this information. So let's let Robbie kind of lay the foundation for it.
Alrighty. Actually, she came to me with this incredible story, and I've been interested in the paranormal for quite a long time. I think the first thing I ever thought I said that I wanted to be was a parapsychologist. So I was interested, and she told me this really incredible tale, and I didn't blow her off. So she went ahead and really poured her heart out, and it sounded, I'll be honest with you, you know, it sounds all wonderful and that we were out to help this poor lady out. And you know, the truth of the matter was, we were going to go see a haunted house, and it was going to be cool.
So you didn't realize what kind of a rough and tumble battle this was going to be.
I did not realize at the time that it was going to be a life-changing event. That's absolutely correct.
Gosh.
That's a mild way of putting it.
A life-changing event. Yeah, I'd say that's pretty mild given what you all went through. And Penelope was in rough shape, was she not?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. She had, there was from the initial time when I was told what was happening on her property till when we actually did an investigation, it was just the changes in her were incredible. You could look at her and tell that something was devastating her life.
How awful for her. And, you know, one of the things, too, about your book that's interesting, you do give a word of warning to people. The people that are out there ghost hunting now as a hobby and going into these places, these deep, dark places, you have a message for them. You want to reiterate that?
Well, that is truly one of the main points of the book, is that, you know, people are getting into this, and it's real. It's, you can't just not believe. And some of the interesting things that happens nowadays is people are so busy trying to debunk the spiritual that they ignore it to a certain extent, and it can follow you home and make your life quite miserable.
How many times have I said that on the air, Patricia?
Oh, so many, Helene.
I mean, people think that they see the paranormal shows on TV, which are largely staged, not all of them, but a lot are, and they think that they're just going to go down to the local cemetery and start crossing these lovely souls. And the lovely souls are in heaven, right? The cemetery's an energy field. Grandma doesn't live there. And they don't get it until they're on my phone or your phone or someone else's phone screaming in hysteria, really. It's really sad.
You know, there's a funny thing to all this. Is I'm actually a scientific paranormal researcher. Been doing it since 1976. Mm. I'm about to write a scientific paper that acknowledges the existence of Einstein-Rosen bridges or wormholes, and they are the primary source for the information emerging into our environment that we call a paranormal event. It's also how mediums get their information. The information emerges. It's a local phenomena with a non-local source, meaning it's coming from outside our universe. And it's all based in physics. And the idea about it is that when these portals form, anything can use them. Not just your passed-on loved one, you know, I mean, anything from something extraordinarily good to something extraordinarily bad can use it, because it's basically a tunnel through time-space.
Yeah.
So literally anything that happens to walk a while or walk by can mosey right on through, and you may not get what you wish for. In fact, the working title of the book was Careful What You Wish For, because...
Nice.
These conduits are not good or evil. They're just conduits, and anything can choose to come through it.
So do you think, and now I have to ask this question from a personal point of view here, David, because now you got me thinking. If you're using a portal that is said to be completely protected by the divine or by good or however way you want to put it, do you think that negative things can still get in there?
There's no protection between a portal. It follows the rules of physics, not the rules of any preconceived deity. There's a certain physical condition that occurs that allows it to take place, and they take place all around us all the time, not just necessarily in a active location. They
right.
tend to be more prevalent in an active location where there have been births and deaths,
mm-hmm.
because these conduits are also conduits for the consciousness, for the soul,
mm-hmm.
or for whatever you
mm-hmm.
want to call it. When we're born, we utilize these conduits. When we die, we utilize these conduits.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just a part of physics that occur,
mm-hmm.
and these entities use them.
Well, people think I'm a little hysterical. A portal opens in my house, I close it right up. I don't care.
Strangely, mediums have the ability to do that. Mediums
mm-hmm.
have, and we're studying this right now, but mediums
really?
Have the ability to open them and close them at will. And that's a mechanic we're studying and have been for the last 4 years.
Really?
They do
but
it on
I don't,
a, on
I don't
a smaller
open the portal,
scale.
But I don't open the portal because I decide to. It opens because of the work I'm doing.
It opens because something is trying to give you information.
Ah, okay. But
and it may not be instigated.
It mm-hmm.
Yeah, it may not be instigated by you, but it is certainly instigated by the source of the information because its source is not here. It's somewhere else.
Right.
We're
right.
just at the destination of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can shut it off. Well,
mm-hmm.
some mediums can, some can't. But you can close it down temporarily, but it will keep coming back until that information emerges and you get
mm-hmm.
that information. You can just put it off.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an intelligence behind it, and it will continue to try until it gets its message through, or it will just make things, like, really miserable around you for a while until you do.
Well,
so you can't hide from it. You can put it off for a little while and everything,
well,
but eventually it will come.
Really? I don't know. I get portals popping up. Patricia, you can say something here if you want to, but I get portals popping up a lot, and I just close
them.
No, you
do.
But
yeah.
I feel like the communication that I get as a medium, maybe it's coming through a portal I can't see, but if I'm talking to divine guidance, and I'm identifying them and really going deep to check because that's what I do every single time. I'm not getting a portal with that necessarily, or am I incorrect?
Well, you're getting a gate. You're getting
okay.
a gateway.
Yeah.
See,
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing
right.
with entities,
mm-hmm.
they have gates, and those
mm-hmm.
gates they control. In
mm-hmm.
other words, you
okay.
can't just open
so
the gate
yeah.
unless they want you to open
right.
it.
Right.
That's a different kind of wormhole
mm-hmm.
because it's
okay.
being controlled by an extremely powerful energy.
Well, I'm sorry to take up your time, but I so appreciate that explanation. It's beautiful.
Well, you know, mediums require confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that makes them secure.
Mm-hmm.
And they require confirmation both in the information they give because they get it as random bits of information. Most mediums have no idea what the ending of their message is going to be or how it affects the person they're giving it to. Because they're getting it like you're flipping through a big book like War and Peace and reading a paragraph at a time out of sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not until a specific paragraph gets read or a specific piece of information comes through you that all of a sudden everything falls into place. The client understands now what the message is. It's almost like a light bulb goes off in their head because you're not getting the information in order. You're getting it as it's given to you. And it's not necessarily in the right order when you get it.
That's true, but I also think that these guides or whatever name label you want to put on them are giving people information regarding their own divine timing and what's necessary for them to hear. So I don't think a medium is going to get everything.
It's a good luxury to have, but you have to look at it a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
Every medium has their own catalyst, their own guide, guardian
mm-hmm.
angel, whatever you want to call that.
Mm-hmm.
And they each have their own agendas and their own views
oh,
on
they
what's
do.
Going on.
We've talked
so
about that, haven't we, Patricia?
Oh, gosh, yes.
You can have four different mediums read the same person, and they will all give pertinent information that's applicable, but it will be from different perspectives.
That's true, and I've said that many times.
Important.
Yeah,
that's
it
what's
is.
Important to understand because the source of the information is different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be given from a different perspective based on what that entity or that energy perceives it to be or what their personal agenda is. So it's
absolutely
you know, you're,
true. Yeah.
you're kind of at the mercy of the people mm-hmm. giving you the information or the entities giving mm-hmm. you the information. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I've heard people say, and I've been studying mediums up close and personal now for, like I said, 4 years. And I have seen 4 different mediums read the same person, and we actually did a controlled experiment with this. They all talked about the same event, and yet the information was all different, and yet it was all
accurate.
Relative.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was all from a different perspective.
That's true. That is absolutely true. And I also think mediums are people, and we also have our own subconscious agenda. Are you more interested in focusing on love? Are you more interested in focusing on hate? Are you more interested in scaring someone or making them happy? You know, and so you have that in the mix as well.
Absolutely.
And it becomes
Absolutely.
A strong suit. What are you good at? Are you good at dates? Are you good at just information? Are you good at looking at what people
right.
look like? You know, everybody has a different talent.
And people, different mediums get information differently. Some see
mm-hmm.
like a movie play out in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Others get voices. Others get feelings. Others just know things. I mean, there
right.
are different mechanics involved in the information transfer. We have
so
actually seen the information. We've seen it emerging and measured it and photographed the actual waveforms of the information. And what's interesting is that somehow a medium receives this like a radio receives a carrier wave,
mm-hmm.
and they
mm-hmm.
read that information off the carrier wave and translate it into the information. That's something we don't understand yet. We understand how it propagates. We understand how it emerges. We understand how the medium picks it up and how the medium has some control over it. But we don't understand the whole thing fully to be able mm-hmm. to say, hey, you know, this is exactly what it is. But we are mapping it and we are making progress in that. I've been working with the Rhine Center. They're doing some interesting experiments about light emission, ultraviolet light emissions that mediums have and
mm-hmm.
martial artists mm-hmm. have and healers have. We are truly creatures of light. And the Rhine Center is proving it.
That's awesome.
So there's a... There's a great deal of research being done right now. Also, the Winbridge Institute in Arizona is doing some incredible work with mediums right now.
Mm.
I'm looking at it more of treating the human being or the medium as an electrical system and looking at it from an engineering perspective and trying to understand how the mechanic of it works with the human body. Mediums tend to have a much higher level of magnetite in the brain. Now, it becomes problematic if you ever get an MRI because you will get an overexposure on the MRI image.
Hmm.
And generally, people that are mediums have to have multiple MRIs to get a readable MRI because the magnetic material is like overexposing the film.
Hmm. How interesting. Goodness.
It's
a great time to be interested in the paranormal because it is so much more out in the open, as you mentioned so many years ago when you had this initial experience in Florida. It was not talked about.
It was taboo.
It was.
They would have put us in jail or
they
put
would've.
Us in an institute. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the real interesting thing about the real interesting thing about our book is when you look at it in a historical perspective, it really is, that's how you did paranormal investigations in those days. You went and showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you didn't talk about it to anybody else.
We didn't have all these gizmos and gadgets and blinky light boxes to tell us anything in those days. I had a TAC A4010S reel-to-reel. I had a converted mine detector from the Korean War to look for EMF. And you basically had about 3 pieces of equipment that you could haul in a van, and it would fit in a van because things weren't miniaturized like they are today. And our best tool back then was, as Robbie said, was the human body and perception. That was the you know, Hans Holzer was working with mediums back then. And he was a leading researcher at the time. I had the privilege of knowing him and Dr. William Roll, who was probably the leading expert on poltergeist activity. Those were my mentors. And they were truly giants. But back then the field was based in parapsychology, which is a subjective discipline, meaning that you are dealing with the human response to the conditions. Nowadays we're doing a lot more objective research, more scientific-based research based on objectivity instead of subjectivity. And it's stronger evidence, of course, because the human element has so many variables involved in it, and we don't understand the human consciousness, and that's something that certainly needs to be explored further, because how much of this is the human element through the power of intent that's adding to it, strengthening it, possibly creating it? You know, the human factor is something that needs to be explored, and we're starting to do that as well. So we didn't have all the fancy technology.
We didn't have any of this, as you mentioned, and it was like we were trying to figure something out by measuring the exhaust on a car. It just wasn't giving us the right information. No. And as our guest next week, Milo Duquette, who's wonderful in talking about all of this, you would enjoy him tremendously if you don't know him already. And he always says it's all in your head. You just don't know how big your head really is. And that's what you're talking about now, understanding consciousness, the depth of it, there are no limits to it. So it's a fascinating conversation, but I've got a question to get back to this Demon Street book. What was it that brought all this stuff forward and began this process where this woman felt so tormented? What did it? Was it Clevis? Was it the area it was in, a combination of the above? What was it?
Well, Robbie did a great deal of research on Clevis and his family. And what was interesting is that his grandfather owned at one time about 3/4 of Levy County in Florida, and he wasn't mentioned in any history books. And anytime you have a person that wealthy and that powerful in a rural region of Florida particularly, they don't go unmentioned. So there was a reason why he was not mentioned in history books, and he had a very dark, dark history. Let me let Robbie talk about it, because he actually did the hands-on research to try to find out what was going on with Clevis's family. And we found some very intriguing things, such as his grandfather wasn't really just his grandfather, but was also his father.
Ew.
The Internet is wonderful. It was very, very hard in actually trying to find anything written about his grandfather. And the reason only came out recently. At one point in time, there had been a African-American town almost
Rosewood.
On their property, Rosewood.
Rosewood.
And about, was it 1927, 1932, somewhere in there, they exterminated the town.
The whole town.
They burned it. They burned it and killed everyone in the town.
Uh-huh. Wow.
To get rid of it.
Wow.
And it was all over a misunderstanding, of course.
There was a movie made about it. Supposedly there was a rape involved, and the wrong person was accused of it, and the end result was that they destroyed this town. There was a movie made about it about 7 or 8 years ago, and I think it was called The Rosewood Incident or something like that.
Oh my goodness.
It was about that town, and the person that owned that property that town was built on was Clevis's grandfather.
So there was a lot of turmoil that affected a lot of people. It wasn't just him and his family members. It was the extended area that was affected by all of this.
What's interesting is that was the grandfather's land. Now, the property where Penelope and Clevis lived, that had actually been his grandfather's also, and had been a homestead before the city of Gainesville actually even had their limits out that far. And I think a big problem also was on that property, there were at least 5 ghosts. And as we were informed later on by a psychic, there were 3 ley lines that crossed that specific bit of property, and all of them were negative.
Mm.
So it was a maelstrom of just coincidence that formed this incredible storm.
There is no coincidence.
I'm firmly convinced
Clevis's grandfather picked that location to build that house for a very specific reason.
And what was that reason?
Just the conditions were absolutely right for conjuring.
So that was his intent?
His intent was to conjure entities.
I would think so. Absolutely.
Now, in the book, you talk about a connection with the Sumerian people. And are you able to continue to draw that connection with this family and how they brought things forth?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That one Dave has
in
to
fact,
take.
Well, before
in
you
fact,
go into this, let me just tell you what I'm seeing, because, as you know, Aline and I both do this kind of work, and we often see things during shows, and I just keep seeing that one of the things that's plaguing you that I'm seeing right now is a djinn. That there's a very, very powerful djinn that's involved in all of this.
Well, there's something stronger than a djinn. We're dealing with gods.
I'm sure there is, but that's what I'm seeing right now, is that one of them is a djinn.
Sure. Djinns are servants. They're servants of higher beings. I mean, they can be chaotic when left unattended, and they are tools that are used by the greater entities to do things, particularly from that region of the world. But we're talking about a people that rose up from basically Cro-Magnon man and killing things with sticks and stones to building huge ziggurats out of intense, complex building schemes in basically 100 years, from that level to that level. So there was an intervention of technology. There was an intervention of knowledge. The whole idea of growing crops were introduced in ancient Sumeria. It was a big, huge... I mean, the evidence for there being extraterrestrial intervention in the civilization of Sumeria doesn't have to be manufactured by Stitchin's, misguided misinterpretations of cuneiform writings. There's plenty of evidence in the original writings. And the thing is that these entities were seen as gods and goddesses. And they actually were physical. They actually walked the planet. They ruled for thousands of years. They had an extraordinarily long lifespan. And they are still influencing the Earth to this day. We dealt with a particular nasty entity from that group of people. Now, the Sumerians didn't actually have demons and gods. Everything was a god to them. It's just some of the gods had really bad intentions. They worshipped over, I think, 6,000 different gods. And some had really good intentions. Like Enki, for example, was really who created the modern human race from genetic engineering. Enlil, on the other hand, wanted to destroy the human race, and that's who caused the flood that the Bible attributes to Noah being a part of it, but who 2,000 years earlier, the original story has Gilgamesh as the person portraying what the Jewish people would later put into their Bible as Noah. It's the same story. In fact, there is a great deal of evidence that points to Enlil being the vengeful god in the Bible and Enki being the good god in the Bible, because in the early part of the Old Testament, God has two names, Yahweh and Jehovah, and one of them is extraordinarily mean and nasty and vengeful, and the other one is extremely kind and good-natured and beneficial. And they will argue, theologians will argue it's the same God. I argue that it isn't. It's two different entities. But that's another story for another book, which will come down the road. But right now,
wow,
getting back to our
to
story. Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of it's already written. That's the beauty of it. But
for you.
Getting back to the original story, we were dealing with an entity that was actually made famous by a movie that Hollywood just happened to pluck a name out of history to use for the demon, and that's The Exorcist. And the name of the demon was Pazuzu. Well, Pazuzu wasn't actually a demon. He was a minor god. But he had, issues. Pazuzu actually used to protect children from what was later referred to as Adam's first wife, Lilith. But Pazuzu actually protected children from her. She liked to steal children's lives, like, in her sleep. She was responsible for crib death. She was also responsible for robbing semen from men. Nocturnal emissions were attributed to her. So it's a real colorful, the Sumerians were a very colorful, sexual-based civilization. They were very sexual. It was the particular goddess that we are dealing very closely with is Inanna, who's the goddess of fertility, sex, and soldiers, essentially.
So how do you battle a god? I mean, you're talking about Pazuzu as a god. How do you take that on?
You can never really kill them. You can't kill them.
Right?
I mean, that's the thing. And there was no Christian banishments worked on any of these things because they predate Christian religion. And they made a very specific point to flaunt that in our faces and continue to do so to this day, that Christian symbolism has no effect on them. So there was no known banishments for any of this stuff. And it was, you know, part of the book is a long search for finding the path to take in dealing with this. And there were things that happened as a result of dealing with it that we have had to deal with recently to put back in order. Because we had no idea. I mean, there's a dialogue segment in the book where one of our team people says to me, you know, pretty much how many times have I ever banished a demon? And my response was like, never. You know, because I had never dealt with anything like that before. And so there was no rules. There was no book. There was nothing to read to tell you how to do it. And the research that we did, we went to a lot of gifted people that were seers and mediums and psychics. We went to traditional people that were into witchery. I mean, I hesitate to use the word Wiccan because that's a modern term.
Mm-hmm.
But people that practiced the old ways and had some knowledge. Gypsies, for example, are extraordinarily knowledgeable in the ways of the ancient Sumerian race because I do believe that they are a modern representation of them. They still worship these Sumerian gods and goddesses. So there are people that lend help and information that would come to us as much as we would seek them out. Like people would come to us and say, we have information that you really have to have. And a lot of it was pieced together by all of us working together, independently and together, and sharing that information to come up with a plan of action that essentially banished this thing. You can't kill it. You can't destroy it. But you can sort of lock it away for a while.
And piss it off really bad.
So you were able to do that successfully, which is an amazing feat, and yet you find yourselves today still trailed by other entities that are giving us technical difficulties on our show and things like that.
Exactly. Well, we have over 6,000 of them, and some of them are angry and some are not. Some are happy. You know, we served a segment of that group of energies. And we served the one that was for more for a positive aspect towards the human race than a negative aspect towards the human race. I mean, the human race was created to serve these people, to basically dig gold for them because they decided that mining gold themselves was too hard of a work. So they basically created the human race to serve them, and in return, they gave the human race gifts. They gave them knowledge. They gave them technology. They gave them just enough to make them a viable, survivable human race in that region.
And
they were the original Aryan race.
And I can hear an echo, so the djinn better, whatever he is, better stop that. But here we are today, and now you both consider yourselves to be shamans. But when you started out, that wasn't the case. So as I read the book, I was very intrigued to see that, Robbie, you actually were at the beginning of your almost, I want to say, apprenticeship. Is that how you would describe it?
Yes.
It was an apprenticeship.
That would be the correct term. Yeah, I'd been interested again in the paranormal for quite a while. That's But I had, and it was, again, careful what you wish for. I'd always wanted to live in a haunted house, and at that point in time, I was living in a very active house myself, and everything pushed me in that direction. There was definitely a higher presence that wanted me and David both involved in this. In fact, at several points, we were told that my girlfriend, my wife now, had a very large protector that was constantly looming over her, because they realized that had she been in any kind of danger, I would have immediately hightailed it out of there. So they kept me in danger, but made sure that she was absolutely safe. So we were pushed onto this path, and it really wasn't that subtle. It was a very blatant push. Here, you're going to help this poor woman out, and you're going to learn out of it. That was the most amazing thing, and I think that's the true heart of the book, is not so much the ghost story, but the learning how to deal with something as horrible as this thing was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it was the thing that Robbie had expressed an interest with me earlier about wanting to take up the shamanic path. And Power never pointed him out to me back then when we had these superficial discussions about it. But when this happened, Power, like, put a light bulb over his head and blinded me with it. Mm. And I knew that I had to pass on what I knew to him. And I knew that if I didn't, he could die.
That's serious business.
It is serious business, but that is the precise conditions under which an apprentice must be in order to learn the path, because every decision you make has consequences. Everything you do has long-reaching effect. And part of the whole system is learning the discipline of making those right decisions, because you don't get a do-over.
And you talk a lot in the book about gathering power, that was something that you were teaching Robbie to do, so that he would be able to handle the challenges ahead. And I found that fascinating. Again, this is part of Castaneda's work, whether you believe that Castaneda really did these things with San Juan or not. There was a lot of really valid information in those books. And
well, that information that he had was correct. I mean, that information was lifted from the old Toltec teachings. Those are correct. The teachings that he gives, whether he personally experienced them or not, really doesn't matter, because
exactly.
The teachings were accurate.
And
right. And that's what you have to go by, is the fundamentals of the information that he put forward. And those fundamentals were sound fundamentals. And they are at the root of every shamanic system on the planet. They're worded a little different. The definitions are a little different. The focus may be a little different, but the rules are the same.
Well, talk to us a little bit about the power of twilight.
The crack between the worlds.
Yes.
Part of the journey of a shaman is to learn how to stop the world. And that's a metaphorical description for seeing the world as it truly is, not the way we have been taught that it is. The world to us today in modern society is a description. Everything is solid. You know, the wall is solid. The floor is solid. The nothing in reality is solid. It is a projection of a definition. It is a projection of a perspective that allows our human brain to not go insane, because it won't have any reference points. So our upbringing and our teaching as human beings are to anchor us in the reality of this world, and that reality is self-generated. It's generated by the human element. And part of the shamanic path is to learn to stop that description, to collapse it, and then what you have left is a separate reality. It's actually the reality that our reality is based on or based from.
So when you live in a projection. I agree. But when you're teaching, you were teaching Robbie about the power, collecting power, gathering power, And you were leading him into different places where he could do this. And, again, mostly at twilight. Is that accurate? Mostly during that time of day?
Actually, a lot of the stuff was done at all sorts of times of the day. At twilight, he was looking for a specific task to perform. And that task was to stop the world. And that happens at the crack between the world, which is at dawn and at dusk. And it just happened to be more convenient for us to do it at dusk because we're not morning people. So much of our
life... I wondered
life,
about that.
Yeah, much of our life is lived from around, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning till who knows whenever we get to bed that night or the next morning. So we were basically later in the day evening people, and so we rarely got up for a sunrise unless we were coming home from a show at sunrise. And there's something that's just mind-boggling about watching the sun come up before you go to bed, for me anyway. But it was more convenient for our daily life schedule to work on these things in the afternoon, evening hours. So that's how that happened. We got together after we worked, after we got home. So a lot of it was done later in the afternoon, towards evening, and at night.
Now, when you were dealing with this whole big perfect storm in Florida at this house with Penelope, what would you say was your most frightening moment when you just weren't sure, well, how this was all going to turn out? Did you have one or several that you could tell us about?
Well, let me let Robbie answer that one. He had the most fearsome experiences.
Okay.
Most of it was terrifying. It was actually terrifying quite a bit. But I still think that the one that really got the most reaction out of me was when the demon appeared in my house.
So he followed
you
home?
No, he didn't necessarily follow me home. He came to where I was.
Mm-hmm.
So, and see, it's an interesting thing. One of the problems that we have in the paranormal world is the how we look at entities. For most paranormal researchers, there's three entities. You know, you have the poltergeist, you have the residual haunting, and then you have an interactive haunting. But it's so much deeper than that. There are so many. Well, as you would know, Helene, there's so many different entities out there, and this was a very, very intelligent, very powerful entity. I know Clevis raised it to be his helper and to be his bodyguard, and I think that he lost control of it pretty much from the moment it was brought forth. Thinking that it followed me home, it was really more, it knew where I was, and it came to see, because Penelope and I were sitting at the house, and it came to visit, and that was over the top, because up until that point, it had just been something I had seen and had glimpsed, and it had been really, other than Penelope was having a problem with it on a constant basis, but for Dave and I, it was just little hints here and there, and when it appeared there in my house, that really brought it home.
What did it look like? Can you describe it for our audience?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. You know, there's certain... pretty much most everything that happened in this book is seared into my consciousness. It was a dog. It appeared to me as a dog, except it really wasn't a dog. It was a shadow. In the eyes, you know, I love the description in Jaws of it has black eyes, death. Well, these weren't that death black eyes. These were pools that would suck you in. It's just almost a swirling blackness that you didn't want to stare at too long, because it kind of made you feel a little ill, but just it would just overwhelm you. And when it would open his mouth, it was just blackness was there, and then this black tongue would hang out, and it would sit there and pant. It was, and you knew you didn't really want to be. It was in a separate room, and somehow, luckily, It was not coming in. And the worst part of all, there's a thing in Florida called a sunroom, which is usually three sides, all windows. And it's there for that purpose, to sit in the wonderful sun and enjoy the light. And that damn dog was sitting there in the middle of the afternoon. And that really, I think, was more frightening than anything else.
Mm. Now, what did you do?
Well, luckily, a month or so prior, my good friend David had given me a bag of sacred corn. And as I called him with an extreme panic, he calmed me down and told me to take the corn and count out kernels and then give it everything I got and throw it at the dog with full intent. And I really did. I've had a long martial arts background, and I'm very familiar with chi, which really, I think, helped me with the power part. So when I took that corn and then I threw it at that entity sitting there, I was able to not only give it my full intent, I was able to put some of my energy in it too, because I knew about chi. I knew how to project it. Mm-hmm. So I was at least halfway down the road of being able to really do something. And the entity didn't like it. It ran. But it was a very, very terrifying moment.
It sounds it. And was this like a hellhound? I mean, we've heard stories of hellhounds before, and that they're quite destructive and quite frightening.
It definitely had all the full appearance of a hellhound,
mm-hmm.
but I really think that this was a step above that. This was the demon itself.
Wow.
And it was appearing as that to me. And it did not always appear that way to other people.
Well, it can change,
I believe,
into anything it wants to, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, David and I saw it one night as appearing as something completely different. And the first time when Penelope saw it as a dog, she knew she was looking at something she had seen, but she didn't recognize it at first because it had never appeared to her like that. So I guess it just decided that I needed the dog. Which was much better than had it been a spider. So.
Yes, we don't like spiders. This book is excellent, and Helene and I know we both recommend it highly. It is called Demon Street USA, and it is available on Amazon.com. It is written by David Roundtree and Robbie Lund. We're going to take a short commercial break, and if you have a question, call in at 646-478-0828. Stay tuned, and hopefully we'll be right back.
Your property tax bill. Have you seen it lately? It's frightening. Your property taxes are going up while your home value is going down. It's time to fight back and win. For the real truth about the property tax system, get Attorney Pat Quintilian's book, Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Attorney Quintilian answers all your questions and gives you the facts you need to fight a property tax bill that is spiraling out of control. You'll also read about what happens to property owners who don't check their property records, only to find out too late they're taxed on square footage, fixtures, and even buildings that they don't own. Is this happening to you? Learn your rights. Buy Attorney Pat Quintilian's book today. Are You Getting Screwed on Your Property Taxes? How to Find Out and How to Fix It. Available on Amazon.com.
Are you ready for a new experience of freedom and powerful connection? Would you like a positive, effortless change in your life?
Then come to CosmicFusion.com, where we offer the most advanced energy clearing and expansion techniques in the world, with a quantum vortex energy to activate your divine blueprint and life's purpose. When your soul leads the way with cosmic fusion and quantum vortex energy, you can break clear of past difficulties and blocks with the power of the source. With cosmic fusion, the source energy does the work for you. It's easy and effortless. Listen to our free meditation right from our cosmic fusion website, the Cosmic Code Meditation. Sign up for one of our interactive webinars today. Come to Cosmic Fusion. www.kosmicfusion.com to experience an effortless awakening and transformation. Are you ready for an upgrade? Are you ready for a new experience of living in the fifth dimensional magic and powerful connection? Then visit cosmicfusion.com today. cosmicfusion.com.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic One Company. As one of the pioneers of the Organic One movement, since 1980, I have brought you the very best and most authentic organic wines directly to your table. I work with small family estates who grow certified organic grapes and produce exceptional wines. You can purchase our wines individually from our website at theorganicwinecompany.com or join one of our wine clubs. Our organic wines are perfect for you and for your family as gifts for friends and relatives, and they are simply spectacular for the holidays. Visit us at theorganicwinecompany.com to enjoy the very best organic wines conveniently delivered to your door. I am Véronique Raskin, passionate about my mission. I offer to you vegan, organic, and biodynamic wines, wines made by people of the heart, wines with a heart. Au revoir. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE.
Everyone, this is Supernatural Girls Radio with your host, Patricia Baker. That's me and my lovely co-host, Helene Olson. We have terrific guests tonight and a great conversation going on. David Roundtree and Robbie Lunt, who are authors of the fabulous book, Demon Street, USA. So we are back live on the air, and oh my goodness, what an adventure you two are on. This is amazing.
Yeah, that's a word for it.
You know, that I have to say that, if we can say nothing else, our life is absolutely not boring.
That's for sure.
That's
for sure. My goodness. Well, now, I have to ask you, because this djinn that has accompanied you to our radio show, what do you do with an entity like that? How do you handle it?
Well, they don't eat much, so they're kind of low maintenance.
That's good, this low maintenance. But you did mention something important about it. It's unattended. Usually something like that that causes chaos is unattended. So how do you deal with that?
Well, we have our own safeguards in place. I mean, when you become pure light and pure energy, even djinns really can't do a whole lot to you. You have to understand that these things are, a djinn is basically an elemental entity. It's an elemental energy. It's just part of the natural energy of the earth. It just happens to manifest itself in sticky wicked ways at times. But by utilizing the same thing that you would normally walk through your life with to protect yourself, it's just like any other energy that tries to invade you. You have a wall against it, and you drop that wall as needed for whatever is required. Usually we tend to work with our walls pretty much full bore all the time. We live that way. There are
things
because, that
well,
would
love to... Yeah,
because,
well, you have an awareness that other people don't have. They may have some hints that these things exist, but they don't have the awareness and consciousness that is expanded that both of you carry.
And they don't have the personal power to deal with it. Part of
Very
that whole
point.
Quest
yes.
that Robbie went on was accumulating personal power to be able to manifest that personal power as he saw fit or as he needed. And that's what we all do. I mean, all the people that walk the shamanic path are in touch with that power. They gather power all their lives. And we continue to gather power. We have used power along the way. So it's a good thing that we have, but we're constantly, you cannot overfill yourself with power.
And as both of you know, I mean, once that little light clicks on and you've walked through that door and it's hit you in the butt on the way through and closes behind you,
you're
a beacon.
Yep.
And every spirit that's out there sees that you can at least, you know they're there, and because of that light, they are attracted to you. So you really, you have to keep a constant wall up. I learned that a few years ago when I had gotten a little lax and something showed up at my house that was not really nice. Since that point forward, I've always kept at least a low-level protection around me at all times, because you don't want just the nastiness jumping in. And for the most part, when you start with, you know, the white light of yourself, the good entities, it doesn't keep them away. It tends to only keep the negative entities away. So that's a good place to at least start.
Yeah, and that's important for our audience to know.
Yeah, I mean, at some point they know they can't get in you. And so they don't want to waste their time too much, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you know, it's the whole lightness-darkness thing. I mean, Robbie and I kind of walk the gray area, because sometimes we do light work, sometimes we do dark work. We maintain a balance. See, the world will continue to go as long as there's a balance. But when one side gets more powerful than the other side, that's what causes the world to end. Because one side will finish its agenda versus the other side finishing its agenda. So the secret to humanity surviving is to maintain the balance. To never really let good totally triumph over evil, and to never let evil triumph over good.
And actually what you're seeing right now in the world is a balance, because we have been in the patriarchal energy for so long and so deeply that it's really taken over the whole balance. So right now the matriarchal is starting to rise, and unfortunately, when you have a high-pressure system and a low-pressure system, when they balance out, that's where you get the tornadoes and the huge lightning storms. And so in the same sense, you have a spiritual high-pressure system and a spiritual low-pressure system that are really trying to balance out, and you're seeing it manifesting everywhere in the world right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on in the world that give people pause. But here's a question for you from the chat room. Somebody's asking, do the dark energies show up even if you call the beings of light to you?
Well, when you call your kids from upstairs to dinner, do just the ones that behave come, or do they all come?
That's
all of these beings
answer.
Are related. All
mm-hmm.
of these beings are related. They're all family. They're all part of the same progeny. And as such, they are all interconnected. And do they quarrel like any other family? Absolutely, they quarrel. Do they each have their individual agendas? Absolutely. But they are still one family.
It's interesting. We've had Dahani Oahu on the show recently, and she always used to say, when you have that much light, you also attract that much darkness. So that goes along with what you're saying with the balance.
Well, doesn't light really show as light when contrasted with the darkness?
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't have the other, each would be invisible.
That's right.
So,
you know, personally, as a lighting designer, I like to actually work on my shadows more than what I'm illuminating, because a lot of times in working on the shadows, that's where you're really bringing the psychological effects to the audience. So, it is
drama. You know, it adds drama, it adds depth, it adds intrigue, it adds emotion. Light is very important, but lack of light is also very important. And maintaining that balance is the key to the survivability of the human race. And thousands of years ago, there were many human beings working on maintaining the balance. We went through a period of time where there were very few. There is an awakening going on now where people are confused because information is coming to them. Information from past lives, from past incarnations where they have been guardians as such or healers as such, and they don't know how to process this information as it's coming to it. And we're calling it the Great Awakening because we have people coming out of the woodwork asking us questions, and they're compelled to ask us questions. Us and our inner circle, we are getting people daily that just out of the blue, you know, you don't even know them, they're asking you very pertinent spiritual questions. And why they're asking us is because they are compelled to ask us because we have the answer, apparently, for them. And it's not universal, but it is a large amount of people who are awakening to this information and having a tough time coming to grips with it and understanding it.
The veil's very thin, that's for sure, and you're right. A lot of people are experiencing things that they probably never expected to. Another question from the chat room, kind of along the same line. This person wants to know, when you surround yourself with light, can the darkness still interfere?
Robbie?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very interesting question. It really depends upon the strength of the entity.
And the
also
strength of the person.
Yeah, it's balanced out between
person.
I like to think that there's three legs on the metaphysical mechanics stool. You have your personal power, you have faith, and then you have intent.
Yes.
So it really comes down to how good is your intent, how strong is your faith, and how much personal power do you have.
How impeccable you are and how strong your will is.
Mm-hmm.
Your will, and I don't mean like willpower. I mean will is a power that emanates from the umbilical region of the human body. Much like in Reiki, when you flow light through your body, it comes in through the top of your head and it sort of exits through your navel region. That's the same thing that we refer to as the will. The will has to be unbending, and you have to be impeccable as a warrior in order to overcome these things. It's not something you can go out and spit some flaming gasoline at and declare it, you know, banished. It's a very real energy. It is very powerful. While it can't kill you directly, it can certainly set up a series of circumstances to kill you indirectly. And if you're not impeccable, you can get tricked, tripped up, and you can die. And it's nothing to fool with. And we have a lot of people who get their $25 certificate from, you know, the Universal Life Church and declare themselves demonologists, and one day they're going to find the real thing, and they're not going to be prepared to deal with it. And their client is going to be endangered, and they will be endangered. And it
so the answer to the question, actually the answer to the question then would be, yes, the darkness can still mess with you if you're surrounded with white light.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. And I'm sure that this person will sleep well tonight knowing this.
We're all about bad dreams.
I guess,
that's
huh?
That's our forte. You know,
well,
it's nothing like living something.
It is. And, you know,
like
you bring a very, very important message to the audience because, let's face it, today paranormal is just exploding. People are so fascinated by it. You see how many television programs there are, how many radio programs like ours there are. out there where people are talking about this stuff and have reenactments on television shows that show these things. And
sure.
it's a big deal today. So it's great that you are very realistically giving people an appraisal of what they might be in for. So it's not something to take lightly.
No, it isn't. And you can never be too prepared. And if you think, let me just finish this train of thought, and I'll cede the floor to you. if you think that you can take a break and not think about it for 10 or 15 minutes, you're wrong, because something's waiting to take advantage of that guard being dropped. So you literally live your life on the edge of the cliff 24/7. And if you don't live impeccably, it can take a toll on you. You can wear yourself down by battling yourself. And oftentimes these entities manipulate the situation to make you destroy yourself.
And that is what we see quite often, and it's very sad. But there are ways, as you have mentioned, and people can learn about them from you guys and in your book, to walk a path with this that's
absolutely
different from the one they might have grown up with. You know, take different steps and become more aware.
Yeah, you have to understand that 99% of the religions that exist today are new religions. They're religions that came long after the Sumerians, after the Egyptians. There's no organized Egyptian church. There's no organized Sumerian church. You know, there's no temples to Inanna or temples to Zeus or temples to any of these family of gods that sprang out of Sumeria. So all of the new religions basically sprung from a period of time roughly less than 2,000 years ago. None of the old religions are really practiced accurately today. Very few, I will say, or there are very few practitioners that are practicing it accurately. But those are the base religions, and they don't exist, you know, in your community today. And so there's no place really for you to turn locally in most cases. You have to seek people out. And you can't learn about it in a book. You can't learn about it by someone telling you. You have to live it. You have to experience it. Because there's things that there are no words for. They just have to be experienced.
Well,
you
guys have been pretty lucky. I mean, David, you had your grandfather, Black Elk, who taught you the ways of a spiritual warrior. And then you Robbie. So, I mean, you have this kind of blessed event that, you know, brought you into this lineage.
Well,
it's
an information.
Most people.
Right. It's an information that's been passed down for 15,000 years.
Right.
And that information is basically word of mouth and experience is how it's passed on. And each teacher teaches it differently because there's different lines of knowledge. And each apprentice applies it differently to their individuality. So it's an individual thing with a foundation of cinder blocks to keep it together. But the actual, it's just like, you know, every building you look at is built from building materials. But, you know, many buildings look completely different, even though the same construction techniques are used to build them.
Right.
And that's exactly what happens in this path, is that people build their own temple. They build their own house. And they use the same fundamentals that everyone else builds their house with, but no two houses are exactly alike.
Can I ask you a personal question, Robbie? And
certainly,
especially David. Inanna appeared to me many years ago. And even though I've heard a lot of spurious, dark information about her, I found her to be an amazing teacher and warrior.
Absolutely.
And she is just phenomenal. And I'm wondering if you would know why an entity that powerful and that large would just show up to me one day.
Because she obviously had information for you that was part of her plan.
Okay.
Inanna is actually walking the earth today in physical form.
Oh, okay.
She manifested physically the first time last July, and she's now in permanent residence of an individual that's, you know, and this story will be in a book coming down the road as well. But part of what Robbie and I had to set right was in the process of Demon Street occurring, we screwed some things up, unbeknownst. And we had to set those things right. In fact, 27 years of our life was pretty much misery because we screwed up. And it wasn't until the information came to us to just exactly how badly we screwed up were we able to fix that, to correct that. And we had to do some atonement, both of us did.
Quite a journey, you guys. Wow. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and being patient through our technical difficulties, which apparently you have a lot of experience with.
Yes, we
so,
do.
Oh, my. But thank you. This has just been a great show, so enlightening, and we would love for you to come back when your next several books come out, whichever one comes first after Demon Street, please let us know. We'd love to invite you back. And for everybody out there, please go get a copy of this book. It's excellent. Demon Street USA by David Rowntree and Robbie Lunt. It is available on Amazon.com and probably in your local bookstore, too. So
absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it was a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
And like we say, whether you believe it or not, get it anyway. It's a good damn story.
It really is.
It's a spiritual journey, and I loved it. I loved it.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. And thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, everybody, we'll be back next week with one of our very favorite people. Lon Milo Duquette is coming back with his book, Homemade Magic. So, Helene, I can't wait to get Lon back on the show because he's a riot and a half. And
always a lot of fun.
Always fun for us and our audience. And, again, thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight and being patient with our technical problems at the beginning of the show. And have a wonderful tonight and a wonderful tomorrow. We'll talk to you soon.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for another radio adventure with Supernatural.